We're back, Roland Smith, along with my good friend Carl Sabatino, and this is Smith Sabatino. When we just left, we started to talk a little bit about Vietnam and Carl's experiences there back from 66 to 68. I was there as a journalist in 1968 during the Tet Offensive, and I think the one thing that I took away from that, Carl, was that it was a country that screamed. You could feel it.
It was a situation that someone once said to me, and I wish I could remember who. I believe it was Captain Lee, who said something very similar to what you have just said. It's very loud in this country, but nobody's listening. Different way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
It was extremely loud. That was not a quiet place to be. And they were all telling us, you don't belong here. It's time to go. That time, from the time I was there and you were there, took another 7 years. But the United States was doing something it had to do. And I do believe, and many have now, with the separation of history and time, have begun to believe that it really was another chess play in the Cold War.
Oh, indeed.
And that's all it really was. Yeah. But it cost so many lives, 50,000 plus. For those of us who were there, we weren't fighting, especially for the United States per se. We were. Our country was important. We volunteered our draft. Many of us, it was a subscription army at the time. But the point was, I was protecting my buddy. And all I wanted to do was go home. That's all I wanted to do was just get home.
And so many didn't make that.
And so many didn't.
Yeah.
The faces are still with me to this day. Men and women, and we always forget our women, who fought and died in the field. The nurses, God bless them all. And even then, there were some mechanics. And there were some, what we used to call loaders, in and around the major bases who died, who are totally forgotten. But they're on that wall in Washington, D.C.
You know, a little bit later, maybe we can talk to and bring in as a guest an interview that I did with Lieutenant Dan McCormick.
Yes, let's do that.
And but that's not for now. Let's try that in one of the segments in front of us. I want to tell you of an experience. I learned what power really was when I was in Vietnam. I was on the carrier Ticonderoga for one of my assignments, and I needed to have an interview with the commanding admiral for the fleet at that time. It was a guy named John Wynell, Admiral John P. Wynell. Never forget that. Got up to the admiral's deck on the Ticonderoga, and I set up the camera with my cameraman. And he sits up on a stool, and there's this, you know, glass in front so he can see, you know, the landing deck and all of the other areas of the ship that I guess are important for the admiral to look at. And I said, the sun was coming in. I said, sir, I can't overpower. My lights can't overpower the sunlight coming in. Would you mind stepping over here and we'll do an interview just standing up? And he says, hold on a minute, son. And he picks up a microphone and he says, steer 070. Now the entire fleet now turns until the sun comes around through the windows, shines on his face, and we now do the interview. That, to me, was an exercise of power that I had never witnessed as a young reporter at the time.
Well, you know, I love that story because it still is to this day. I mean, the admiral is the commanding admiral of a fleet literally can take the fleet any place they want, literally, literally.
Yeah.
Within a region or within an ocean or two, they can go. But that did not apply to the land.
No.
The Navy, because we were command of that ocean, the Gulf and the South China Sea, the United States military was in full command of that ocean. On land, we're lucky we could stick our heads up at times without getting it shot off, depending upon where we were at the time. We knew that we couldn't control it. All we were trying to do was put a lid on it. We knew that. I would pass them up the chain every day to MACV. But nothing happened.
You were a grunt, right?
I was a grunt.
And what's a grunt?
A grunt is someone who takes orders, does what he's told, smiles, and says, yes, sir. That's a grunt. or yes, sergeant. That was about it. And we're just the Spec 4s, the PFCs, who are told to do what you got to do. I got up to spec 4. I was busted any one of a number of times for various insubordination when I told some young lieutenant, blankety blank blank, I'm not going up that hill because I don't want to die. Hill 350, whatever the heck it was. No, there's no reason to take that hill. He just wanted a star on his beep. No, no. You want to go up that hill, you go. We did this out in the field. It was total. It was like marauders, for God's sake. But we managed to get the job done, at least to hopefully anyone's satisfied.
It's so much different from then, and that was so many years ago, to our warriors today who serve in Iraq, well, did serve in Iraq, yes, and certainly in Afghanistan.
They're professional soldiers.
And, you know, who knows whether you will have boots on the ground back in Iraq at some
Again,
point.
But they are professional soldiers, and they are trained differently. Yeah. We had, by the way, we had almost 15 weeks of basic training in AIT. That's a long time. That's nearly 5 months. We were expert in almost any one of a number of crafts, okay? And they just put us out there. They trained us to fight the war. This is true because I was in Fort Hood, Texas. They trained us to fight the war with tanks that became the Iraqi War 25 years before it happened, and they sent us to a jungle where the tanks were absolutely no use whatsoever. And we had to improvise to stay alive.
Yeah.
Well, you were there. You know what we went through.
Let's get off the Vietnam subject,
sure,
just for a moment. You know, I saw something just a couple of years back that you don't see very often. And I was sitting on a deck at a condominium complex, and in the middle of this yard or commons area was a beautiful, beautiful rose garden. I would say there were probably 150 to 200 rose bushes, each blooming, and it was just gorgeous.
Wonderful.
And I'd happened to be drinking my coffee that morning, and I watched this gentleman come up the path, and he had a briefcase and a two-piece suit, jacket, and tie. And he put his briefcase down, and he just stood there, kind of folded his arms, and he looked, and he looked, and he looked. He finally walked over to one of these bushes, and he gently, I thought he was going to pick the rose actually from one of these bushes, and he didn't. He just caressed it and looked at it for the longest period of time, bent down, smelled it, put it back gently into the bush, got back, picked up his briefcase, and walked on.
Is that the classic case of stop and smell the roses?
I think so, because I truly, to this day, often thank that gentleman, because I remember that so profoundly, that in everything that we do each day, all the junk that comes out that we have to hear about, that we have to experience, we need to take time to smell the roses.
Particularly in this business that we are in, we do, everyone does. In this business, you said it absolutely correct. All the junk that comes out, we get it first. This is what we do. And we see it all. And do we know it all? No. But we sure as hell hopefully can ask the right questions. And I'm hoping that you and I do take that time to stop and smell the roses. I'm working on it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's so many things that I think that we should do, that I do that I think that other people might enjoy doing, because it gives you a sense of peace.
Yes.
And
the eternal peace.
Well, this isn't the eternal one, but this.
Well, that's, I'm looking up at the top of the ceiling right now.
This
saying,
is a temporary peace. It's when you're going to get in this density and in this time.
Well, exactly. But you know what? My peace comes when we do our broadcast. I find this to be we're in a quiet room. We're in where our engineers are doing their wonderful best, keeping us on the air, and it's our moment in time. And I've always believed, and you know this, how I feel about that. It is our moment in time, and our moment in time is right now.
Well, what if I were to tell you there's no such thing as time?
Oh, here we go.
No, seriously. What if there was no such thing as time? What if it doesn't exist? What only thing that exists is this moment right now?
And we're living
and
it.
And they're collective on top of one another, but there's no past, there's no future, there's just now.
Well, I've got some bills I want to talk to you about. However, I don't disagree with that, because I think we're living on a what I call a flat plane of existence. And boy, we're going to get very esoteric now, ladies and gentlemen.
No, we're not. No, we're not.
But I believe that The Buddhists do believe that you're, when you look ahead, you're looking past, that your past is your future. And they believe, essentially, I guess the same thing. It's all a circle.
Well, it's what the great author Eckhart Tolle talks about as living in the now.
Yes.
You know,
and
it's,
we are.
It's very similar to what the Buddhist philosophy.
And the now is called Sabatino and Roland Smith.
Yeah, but you still have about 35 seconds that you need to talk before we're going to pick up and then tease our next section.
I have a thought, and my thought very quickly from the middle of the crowd is a final thing on hope. We live on every minute of every day. Anonymous noted to say hope sees the invisible, feels the intangible, and achieves the impossible. My observations from the middle of the crowd on a quickie. As
that sounded like an observation from the middle of a cloud. Not the crowd. Anyway, this is Smith Sabatino. We'll be right back.
America, weekend.
Big Success in a Minute with George and Mary Lynn.
If you haven't watched this show, you've certainly heard of it. It's broken a number of network records.
The show is Duck Dynasty, and Phil Robertson says he can't figure out why people are so attracted to his family.
But the attraction began back in the 1980s. Phil was looking for an outlet for his duck products, so he produced fun videos that became popular among the community of hunters.
Branding expert Liz Goodgold says the family's humor, quotable sound bites, and catchphrases make it memorable and easy to share among fans.
What unique characteristics do you have? Use them to create your own dynasty. It leads to big success.
Find big success at BIGGSuccess.com.
Have back taxes taken control of your life, your bank account, your paycheck? It's time to take back control and avoid tax liens, bank levies, garnished wages, and criminal charges. Take control today and call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-524-6201.
Think green. Harrison with you. California has now banned the cancer-causing chemical phthalate used in bottled water and children's plastic toys. Current U.S. government deregulation still allows toy manufacturers to use it here without penalty or disclosure. Phthalates also make store-bought bottled waters squeezable. Joseph DeGangi, molecular biologist.
Scientists in the laboratory are instructed to avoid contact. They're told it's harmful if swallowed. Scientists are told possible risk of irreversible effects may cause cancer.
Plastic water bottles and toys are proved to cause liver, kidney, and organ damage in laboratory rats. Dr. DeGangi.
That means that a chemical actually comes out to saliva when children chew and suck on
and
it.
Equally with bottled water, unless it's glass. This is Harrison.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.
If you're an inventor who would like to attempt to have your idea or invention patented and submitted to industry, call InventHelp. They have free information for you. Call 1-800-405-9878. That's 1-800-405-9878.